You're listening to the Friends Talking Podcast. I'm Joel Greenberg. Chris Anderson, editor-in-chief of Wired Magazine, recently came to Austin. He was gracious enough to give me a few minutes of his time prior to a talk he gave here. I asked him about the long tail. He wrote the seminal work on the long tail in an article in the October 2004 edition of Wired. If you've never heard of it, the long tail is many things. An economic theory about abundance versus scarcity. A framework for freeing ourselves from a hit-driven economy and giving us almost unlimited consumer choice. And a description of the right side of a sales graph for companies like Amazon.com, Netflix, and others. Here's the idea. As consumers, we see only a fraction of the things available to us in, say, books. Because in the real world, shelf space is limited. Therefore, the whole book publishing model is based upon creating hits, because only hits can afford to be on the limited shelf space. Now, you've got Amazon.com with no concept of shelf space. Amazon.com can afford to sell as many books as it likes because the cost of selling a title is so small due to technology, whether it's a hit or a miss. Okay, here's the math lesson to illustrate it all. It'll only take 30 seconds. If you create a graph, technically a histogram for you stats freaks, if you create a graph that lines up the number of sales per book at, say, Amazon.com on the x-axis and the total revenue on the y-axis, you get a parabola-looking thing that looks like it almost gets close to the y-axis and also almost gets close to the x-axis but never touches. That right part of the graph is called the long tail. Now, the wow factor in the long tail is this. If you were to add up all the revenue of those books that sell only a few books a year, their total sales would rival or beat the total sales of hits. Said another way, technology can make it affordable, profitable, almost a no-brainer, to give customers almost unlimited choice. You see, it costs someone like Rhapsody.com as much to sell a Madonna CD online as it does to sell your neighbor's GarageBand CD online. And with all this unlimited choice, who cares, really, how much of this stuff is out there? With the right filters, it's easy to find the stuff you like. Isn't that the point of Google? That's the power of the long tail. Unlimited choice. Here's Chris Anderson. What is your favorite kind of non-obvious long tail example?
My favorite example this week is Lego. Lego has the business that you know, which is the kits that ship in boxes that you buy on the shelves of Toys R Us. And then they have this much, much larger in terms of product variety business that you that's online through the catalog business. And it starts with, I mean, they basically have they have a couple hundred products in shelves and a couple thousand products available only online through the catalog. And on top of that, they have this new process by which you can design your own products and have them shipped to you as a kit in a box, and other people can buy your designed products and have them shipped to them, have it shipped to them in a box, which gives them sort of, it combines the long tail of product variety, where you can just kind of segment the market from, you know, kind of the mass market stuff in the shelves and the more high-end or niche products that go online, and then the whole mass customization thing, which extends it infinitely.
So how long have they been doing this, and what kind of results have they seen? Do they feel the same way you feel?
They've been doing it now for about 4 or 5 years in various steps, and it represents about 10 to 15% of their business right now. It what's interesting though is that it represents a much larger part of their community involvement and their brand, because the most passionate Lego users are the ones who tend to kind of go to the long tail aspect of their inventory, and it taps into their adult enthusiast community. It taps into the whole kind of peer creation stuff. So a lot of innovation is coming up from below. It drives their R&D. That ideas they wouldn't think of come from the community. So it has a kind of an outsized benefit to the company beyond just the sales itself.
And how did you come up with the story? Like, who first said, hey, there's a phenomenon going on?
No one ever said, hey, there's... I'll tell you actually exactly what happened. I was doing research on the economics of digital media, and was talking to a guy named Robbie Van Endiebe, who runs a company called eCast. It's a digital jukebox company. And he was the first person who said, guess what percentage of our 10,000 albums sell at least once a month? And, you know, the normal answer would be 20% because the 80-20 rule. And I went wild and guessed 50%. And the answer was 98%. And then that was so surprising because we never think of everything selling all the way down. Now, it didn't all sell a lot, but it all sold. And once you realize the demand went far, far beyond the inventory we're used to seeing within the constraints of shelf space, then you're onto something important. So I went around and got data from a number of other companies, the Rhapsody and Music and Netflix and DVDs and Amazon Books, and I discovered that this extent of demand far, far into the niches, far beyond what we'd seen before, was an absolute universal constant, and that's what turned into the long tail.
And when was this?
This was in January and February of 2004.
And how did the companies respond when you say, hey, I really want to take a look at your sales data?
Well, no, I mean, I was getting the sales data from them. So they, in a sense, there's nothing about the long tail that Jeff Bezos didn't have sort of in his head 10 years ago. And all these companies basically built their business around the long tail. What the long tail is, it's just a framework to describe the phenomenon. So, you know, we've been spending the last century looking at the hits and ignoring the niches because they were uneconomic. You just couldn't reach them economically because of, again, the constraints of broadcast and shelf space. Jeff and others recognized that, you know, infinite shelf space was really what the internet offered, and the long tail is just an economic framework to describe this phenomenon of what happens when you offer infinite shelf space.
How did it change your life, the story?
Yeah. you know, I'm not getting as much sleep as I used to. It's the most influential article Wired's ever published, which is gratifying. It then turned into a book, which is going to be coming out in June of next year. So that kind of took my summer. It's a blog as well. So I'm now kind of, you know, I'm a top 200 blogger as a result of this. Which is
the URL is
thelongtail.com. So you know, I now have another beast, you know, consuming every available moment. And you know, it's the watching the resonance of the idea with companies that I never would have thought of, and you know, seeing how people are applying it in their own business, from software to hard goods, has been thrilling. And it's clearly we're just scratching the surface so far.
So when you started working on the story, where did you think it would take you, and where has it taken you?
Yeah. Well, it started as a speech. Almost all my research starts in PowerPoint. You know, when I basically, you know, I do a lot of speaking in front of various audiences, and I try to research, you know, I try to research those industries and think about sort of the broad, like, I kind of come at things from an economics perspective. I try to sort of think about how, you know, digital changes those industries, how, you know, the economics of the internet, which, you know, is kind of my main body of work, applies and transforms industries. And so this involves talking to people and getting data, and we always start with data sets. And you know, we actually have teams at Stanford, Harvard, and MIT business schools all kind of crunching this data with me. So we do a lot of crunching, and we get a sense of the trends. And then this usually starts as a speech with data. And if it resonates, and if I'm starting to get into it, well, I've done it exactly once. I then wrote an article for the magazine. It's kind of bad form for editors to write in their own magazine. It's considered somewhat lazy, so I don't do it often. I do it when the idea demands it.
Why? Why is it considered lazy?
The role of an editor is to bring the best out in his own editors, his own writers, and community of other ideas out there. It's to catalyze great ideas and present them in a form that has impact. If you write it yourself, you're essentially, you're skipping a number of steps. The point is not that I have all the best ideas in the world, but that I can help find and tease out the best ideas in the world and present them in a way that has impact.
And what's the biggest surprise over the past year in working on the story, or seeing where the story's taken you?
The biggest surprise was how broadly it resonated. You know, I mean, take Google, for example. I mean, Google is a company, again, built on the long tail, of advertising, the long tail of publishers. They knew this intuitively. But they've really loved the article because it gave them a kind of a phrase that people understood very quickly and a framework that people understood really quickly, so they could communicate what they were doing much more easily. So it basically it is a it's a kind of a tool that they can use to propagate their idea, and the kind of the phrase, the long tail, that, I mean, if nothing more than that, it's a phrase that's kind of memorable and has, and for people who understand statistics, they understand intuitively where it comes from. That single phrase alone has kind of catalyzed, the next step of evolution of the phenomenon.
It's given people a language to talk about.
Precisely, and that's again what kind of economics does. Is it gives, it doesn't invent phenomenon. It gives people a language and a framework for understanding them, so they can apply it very quickly to their own businesses.
So, how does a physics major go to economics and then become editor chief of Wired?
That's a good question. I was actually a physicist for a while. I was at Los Alamos.
Studying what?
I was working at the nuclear physics facility, LAMF, accelerator. I knew I wasn't going to be a very good physicist, so that kind of required an exit strategy. I then the kind of a natural migration was to work for the work at the science journals, Science and Nature, which kind of took me kind of out of the world of hardcore science into the world sort of about science. And then The Economist recruited me, and they tend to pull people out from, not journalists, but people from science,
from the field,
science and technology and academic backgrounds. And that's why I spent 7 years of my life at The Economist, and that kind of turns me into an amateur economist.
So you mentioned Google. You know, they've opened up a lobbyist office in Washington. There's rumors that they're talking to TiVo. From where you sit, where do you think they're headed? What do you think their real strategy is?
Well, I mean, their model, which is simply using, being able to connect the dots. I mean, the information is out there, and you just draw connections between them that brings signal out of the noise, basically. I mean, you know, we've just touched the beginnings of that. I mean, hyperlinks is the start. But when you think of all the information that's out there, some of it is boards on paper. Some of it is relationships between people. Some of it is just cataloging huge libraries. Some of it is making markets, connecting supply and demand as they do with advertising. All that is kind of latent information that if you can connect it in a way that makes sense, you extract huge value. Name a place where that isn't true. You know, as you can see, they're going and they appear to be heading in all directions simultaneously. I think there is a coherent theme behind it, which is places where connectivity and processing power can make a market where there was an under-leveraged market before. They do have that kind of consistent lens, and they apply it from place to place. And I think you can name things they won't be doing. I mean, I don't think they will be creating content, for example.
They'll be indexing everything, though.
They'll be indexing everything, making markets.
As a magazine publisher, how do you feel about them indexing print?
They do, and it's great. I mean, this is, if you're not Googleable, you don't exist, really.
So, is a magazine still relevant? Like, how is Wired going to remain relevant in a world where we've got personal communication devices
Absolutely.
And contents everywhere?
Well, a monthly magazine resides in a special place. I mean, you know, the experience of reading on paper is especially a long story that's lavishly illustrated with photography and infographics and sort of packaged. That is a substantively different experience than reading on the web. And I think of a monthly as being exactly halfway between the web and a book, which is the web offers immediacy, but it's quite hard to read something long and sort of deep. It's not an immersive experience. A book is a hugely immersive experience, but it's not very immediate. A monthly magazine, which offers kind of a long-form narrative style with all this kind of tactile and visual packaging to pull you in, has some of the depth of a book and the immediacy of the web. And I think that's something that neither can do well and probably won't be able to for years to come. And that's, I think print has a long run rate. I was looking at
Let's go back to the long tail.
It's the same for newspapers, by the way.
Why? What's different?
Well, it doesn't. It's the same content you would find on the web without the immediacy. It doesn't have the additional depth and packaging elements.
So what do newspapers have to do to survive, do you think?
Well, you know, I mean, figure out what's commodity and what's not commodity. I suspect that that local coverage will be their sweet spot. I mean, you know, why should a Dallas newspaper be covering international news? How many people need to be at the Michael Jackson trial?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you just got the question is, where are you off? Where are you adding value, and where are you not? Where are you adding to the existing body of knowledge out there, assuming that everything is accessible?
Last question on the long tail. You talk that it's scarcity versus abundance, which is really the underlying thing.
Yeah.
Sounds very New Age. Sounds very Marilyn Ferguson, Aquarian Conspiracy, 1980. Is it?
I have no idea who she is. Who is she?
Oh, she was just a big New Age author. But you hear a lot of, you know, spiritual people talking in terms of scarcity versus abundance.
That's a new one to me. I had no idea. Scarcity and abundance are, it's a Gilder, a George Gilder formulation. As you know, the definition of economics is the study of choice under scarcity. And, you know, economics is all built around scarcity, which is, you know, it's zero-sum games, and et cetera. Digital technology tends to make things abundant. Transistors get cheap, bandwidth gets cheap, storage gets cheap. Economics doesn't have a way of a framework for understanding that, but it's a powerful force all the same. And as it becomes more and more powerful, and as these kind of abundant elements spread into more and more of the economy, we're looking for a framework. Is it economics? Is it something else? We don't know yet.
If you want to find out more about the long tail, you can read the article at Wired.com. Chris Anderson is also writing a book on the long tail and is using his blog to do so. See thelongtail.com. Special thanks to the Internet Archive and their open source audio section. The song you heard today was Organ Wah by Paul Schuler. This podcast is licensed under the Attribution Non-Commercial Share-Alike Creative Commons license. More information at creativecommons.org. I'm Joel Greenberg, and I'm solely responsible for everything you heard. Listen to it on your MP3 player. Burn the podcast to a CD, and when you're done, give it to a friend. Pass it around. Tell me what you think at friendstalking.joelandkaren.com. Thanks for listening.